Talk Podcast, the only podcast that focuses on watching soccer on TV, online and apps. Coming up on this week's show, Turner announces big changes for BR Live, why the Bundesliga is disappointed with Fox Sports, the latest update on the Champions League rights, plus we have letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. My name is Christopher Harris, and from Wimbledon to the World Series, Serie A and much more, I'm glad to be joined by my guest co-host this week, the one and only Mark Donaldson from ESPN. Mark, how are you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you for that. That makes it sound like a glamorous lifestyle, but I always make sure wherever I am, I'll listen to the World Soccer Podcast. And now I got a chance to stand up for myself and Matteo in our Serie A coverage.
Excellent. Well, it's been a hectic week with both Bayern Munich and Hearts of Midlothian sacking their managers, as well as an action-packed 2 days of the Champions League matches and much, much more. So let's kick it off this week's podcast by asking you, Mark, what have you been watching this past week, and what stood out for you in terms of your soccer experiences, either in person or on television or streaming?
What I like to do, Chris, I did Roma-Napoli, so obviously the timing of the Serie A games means I can't watch a lot of the games that are on at the same time. I can watch some later on, highlights or whatever. This weekend, for example, we're doing Parma against Roma at the same time as Liverpool-Man City. So you find a way to watch things. So Saturday morning, I did Roma against Napoli, was able to see part of Watford-Chelsea on NBC, and then I watched Torino against Juventus on ESPN+. Now, what I try to do, where possible, every week or midweek, I know my schedule for the Serie A on ESPN for the next 2 or 3 months. We know up to Christmas. So I try and watch the teams that I'm about to do the week before, just to get an idea of what. So this weekend, we've got a doubleheader. I mentioned Parma-Roma. I've also got Juventus against Milan. So that's why I wanted to see the Turin derby anyway, but it helped that I was doing the game. And then on Sunday, obviously, Rangers-Hearts on Hearts TV, sadly, glossing over that quickly in the League Cup semi-final defeat. But I watched Parma at Fiorentina on ESPN+, and then Milan against Lazio on Plus. Tuesday, got the last 10 minutes of Chelsea against Ajax on TNT. And then Wednesday at work, again, Juventus, who were at Lokomotiv Moscow in the early kickoff, and Atalanta against Man City. So it's funny, when you asked me to kind of, you give me a heads up that you were going to ask about what I was watching, it's the first time I've kind of put it down and written it down. I don't watch as much Premier League as I used to, and I watch a lot more other football than I used to, and I think that helps broaden the horizon.
Yeah, same here too, and I think the same thing too for a lot of our listeners over the past, say, even like the last maybe 3 or 4 years, is that we've certainly expanded our horizons. We've been introduced to different clubs, different leagues, even more so, and the coverage is better than it's ever been in terms of accessibility and being able to watch practically any meaningful game from around the world. One of the things, Mark, about Serie A is sometimes a lot of the listeners, myself included, sometimes it's overwhelming in terms of all the Serie A teams. There's, I mean, so many games on, especially with ESPN Plus having every single match other than the game of the week on the ESPN television channels. Other than, of course, the Inter and Juve, and actually Atalanta have been great this season too and last season too. Is there any particular team that you would say you would recommend for listeners to really keep an eye on, as something that's really an entertaining team or an exciting, interesting team that we can get our hooks into?
Atalanta would be the team, and I know you mentioned them. They play a formation like a 3-4-1-2 with Papu Gomez, who's getting on in years, the little Argentine, but he's an absolute magician. And some clubs just have players that maybe aren't household names out with the club or the country, but he's fantastic. And what they do with their back three under the coach Gasperini is that when they have the ball, two of the three centre-backs stay where they are, but one becomes part of the midfield. And it's a role that Mancini played last season, and he's now gone to Roma. So it's a role that he's comfortable in, but they also like to have one more person in the middle of the park, on the ball. So they're always fun to watch. I love Ilicic and Papu Gomez. As far as some of the other teams are concerned, it's hard being a commentator. It's not. This is our job, keeping tabs with coaching changes as well, because Udinese started really well. They beat Milan on the opening day of the season, and then they've fallen off a cliff. So they've got rid of Igor Tudor. And I don't know about you, but in every league, when you're a viewer without a kind of passion for a certain club, you just enjoy the league. There's something macabre about seeing a giant struggle. Mm-hmm. And Milan this year, they just, it's like constant change that they think will rectify things. There's no patience there. And they're 11th in the table. They lost to Lazio, and they're a side that they have all the ability, but I don't know, they just have so many individuals and they don't really play as a team. So your kind of unglamorous side would be Atalanta, and your glamorous side that's kind of big name but not playing as they are right now is Milan.
It almost sounds like Manchester United in many ways, AC Milan, in terms of, you mean, a giant club with a enormous history, but it's one that's not me per se, but I think a lot of people have a sense of joy actually watching the mighty fall, because Manchester United, a team that's, you know, we don't have to go through the history, but I mean, there's a certain reality about them now, the two, where in the past it seemed that no matter what they did, they would always win matches or win competitions or leagues, etc. And now there's a really kind of more of a human aspect about them, where they are vulnerable, they're making mistakes, they are boring at times, but and I think in many ways too, with AC Milan and just that proud history and still, you know, tons of supporters in the United States and around the world, it's a shame to see where they are, but maybe, you mean, maybe it's a transitional period that's just going to take a lot longer than people expected.
Yeah, but there's no patience among mm-hmm. Milan fans. The Rossoneri, just they want success. A lot of them have grown up with, like Manchester, you're spot on about Man United. A lot of them have grown up thinking, well, what are we going to win this year? to a lesser extent, it's like me growing up as a Scotland fan thinking, oh, cool, where's the World Cup in 4 years' time? Where are we going to go to? That doesn't happen anymore. So the Atalanta from a kind of unsung heroes, the Milan from the big club kind of struggling, and the one story this year, or one of many stories, but one of my favourite stories from a team that we haven't covered yet. We've covered on ESPN Plus, obviously, every week, but not on the main channels yet, although we do have a couple of games coming up, is Cagliari. Now Cagliari's a side who, again, they're unheralded, and it's not waifs and strays, but they're one of the more experienced teams in the league, with the likes of Cacciatore and Pizzicane and Clavan in defence. They're all in their kind of early to mid-30s. Cigarini in midfield, but Nainggolan. I mean, Nainggolan's a really interesting story, because if you remember, he was at Inter, and when he was at Roma, he went to Inter in return for Davide Santon and a kid called Nicolò Zaniolo. Mm-hmm. Now, Zaniolo was 4.5 million, was his part of the deal. Santon was 10 million, and the whole deal was just under 50 million. Nainggolan's now at Cagliari. So, I mean, I don't know what Inter were thinking. Maybe, like, hindsight's easy. It's like saying, why did James Pelota sanction the sale of Mohamed Salah when he met in an Italian restaurant in Boston with the Liverpool owner? Well, he thought he was getting value for money. He thought Liverpool were overpaying. For Nainggolan, they didn't know what Zaniolo was going to be like. Now Nainggolan's at Cagliari. Zaniolo's ripping it up, signed a new 5-year deal at Roma. And Cagliari are going from strength to strength with Simeone, the striker who's Diego's son up front with 3 goals this season. And the key player for them this season has been a bit of an unheralded midfielder, Brazilian called João Pedro, who's been with Cagliari for like 5 or 6 years. And he just keeps plodding on and scoring goals.
Now, switching gears for a minute to talk about the Champions League, it's been an eventful Champions League, to say the least. Everything from the Chelsea-Ajax just goal fest to, actually, I think it was Dinamo Zagreb against Shakhtar Donetsk, which was another goal fest, and just the incredible scenes. And it's one of those things that there was a lot of criticism online, especially on social media, about, I think, TNT deciding to show Real Madrid against Galatasaray when there's so many other matches that they could have shown that may have been more interesting. And It's a tough job being in charge of programming sometimes, because, I mean, do you go with the TV ratings, or do you go with what might be a less viewed match but might be more interesting? Well, TNT went with Real Madrid against Galatasaray, and the other matches were pretty actually sensational across the board. The one thing I've been watching quite a bit this season so far is something from Tuduene, which is, I mean, previously Univision Deportes, which is their Zona Football whip-around show, which is very much like the NFL Red Zone. I've been watching it all season so far, and I just love it. I mean, it really is sensational because I can tune into it. I can watch every single goal as they happen, and any kind of near miss or any controversy. I walk away from what the Champions League feeling fulfilled, feeling that I've gotten. I know exactly kind of what happened in those 90 minutes, rather than seeing watching Real Madrid against Galatasaray and then seeing kind of a goal fest, but really one sided goal fest and some great goals by Rodrigo, but feeling I missed out on everything else. The one thing, though, however, I do miss out on with Zona Football is having the commentary, because, I mean, I understand a little bit of Spanish and speak a little bit of Spanish, but I'm missing out on the commentary. So that's the one thing I'm missing. And that's something for TNT. If they do get the chance to get the rights for the next round, whether or not they would have, you know, their own English language version of Zona Football, but on the Spanish language side, I mean, again, I don't speak much Spanish, but it's fantastic. I really, really can't recommend it highly enough. How about you, Mark? Did you get a chance to watch any Champions League, or any observations from either commentary or some of the matches you may have seen?
I kind of have a rule that as a commentator, I'm not going to be... I can keep my thoughts to myself in a kind of save draft way, but I'm never going to be disrespectful about fellow colleagues, because it's not an easy job. We got enough stick from people who think we're against the club. The one thing is, speaking as a fan, and Gary Bartels, I just wish he'd be more positive.
I think that's impossible, though. I mean, that's part of the charm of Gary Bartels. He's consistently
oh my goodness,
grumpy.
Do you know what it reminds me of? And maybe it's a personal thing for people. It reminds me of your dad or your mom or your aunt or your uncle used to stand and shout at you when you were playing as a kid because you never did anything right. And I was just like, I don't need this anymore. Just let me watch the game without just this constant negativity. It's like he always finds... Like, I'm sure he's a lovely guy, and I've heard bits and pieces of like podcasts or phone-ins he does in Nottingham and whatever. And I just, when he's commenting, I'm like, please, just a little bit of positivity. Because for me, a commentator is basically the captain of the ship. We're the guy you shouldn't really see. You have to hear from him, but you shouldn't see him. And he just should do his job and make sure the ship is steered. The analyst is someone who can provide something. Now, Craig Burley's a grumpy so-and-so at work. But I really enjoy working with Craig because he tells me something that I don't know. He tells the viewers something that they don't know. He's not overly tactical, but he points things out. But he's still grumpy, but he doesn't bring that constant negativity to the screen. So I just wish Gary was just a wee bit more, not upbeat. He's honest, I don't mind that, but just... Yeah. It's not all about the negativity, please.
I think the difference is that with Gary Bartels is that when I'm picturing him doing the co-commentating and the analysis is that I'm picturing him not smiling, as opposed to Craig Burley when he's given some really kind of just tough criticism.
He doesn't care,
but I picture him smiling, though, because maybe a minute later he's talking about some, you know, great pass or whatever it may be. He doesn't care, but I can picture Craig from, well, watching him on television, but picture him smiling and actually enjoying it. With Gary, it seems to be very much a chore in sometimes. In some ways, because he was at such a height with Nottingham Forest, and the expectations are so much greater that it's kind of a false sense of reality. I'm sure if we went back to watch some of the tapes of Forest back in the early 80s with him playing, I mean, he probably, if he had a analyze himself, he probably would be just as grumpy.
That's a really good point. It's one I hadn't really thought of before. It's a bit like someone playing in Major League Soccer, coming over, a superstar coming over and playing with someone that's getting their first game, and they're not making the runs that the superstar is expected because he's come from a team that is used to that. You've got to blend in. But do analysts, are the best analysts not the ones that have played at the very top level? My favourite analyst is Jim Beglin. Now, Jim was an excellent player, and Jim played at a very high level for Liverpool. Beglin and Drury for me are the number one team. I'm delighted to see they've got Liverpool against Man City this weekend. And sometimes you think to yourself, is it just me that thinks that? But clearly, someone else or whoever is in programming or is deciding that they should go in the big game, they know their stuff because they are the best team. But just when you talk about that, Gary Birtles, I mean, he played for Nottingham Forest in, I think, was he a European Cup winning teams. I think he was still there when they played like Malmo.
Absolutely.
Really good player. Do analysts who played at a higher level hold players to a higher standard if they're not doing Champions League or if it's just a normal game? Interesting thought.
Yeah.
Interesting thought that.
Yeah, absolutely. One more thing about the Champions League too is that also with the Zone of Football, I mean, all in Spanish, but there's still quite a lot of English phrases coming out. So this midweek watching Champions League, I heard a few that was, it's Captain America, Christian Pulisic, and penalty, instead of penal. And even the phrase, check it out, please, says Pep Guardiola. And these are all phrases used in a Spanish language commentary of the Champions League by American commentators that are, I mean, obviously bilingual. It's just interesting because I wouldn't expect to hear in an English language commentary of the Champions League some Spanish phrases thrown in. And I think it's just it has to be on purpose, but it's very much a very bilingual, savvy commentary, and it's certainly one to watch.
Yeah, it's something. I mean, I dropped a très bien into a commentary last week when Jordan Vertu scored a penalty or did something well, but it seemed pertinent at the time. It wasn't done to appear smart or anything like that, but it was a Serie A game. It was an Italian game. Matteo speaks the language. He's one of the, Matteo Bonetti, my co-commentator. He speaks perfect Italian. The pair of us are still working on our English, but I'm sure we'll get there. So I'm not going to step outside my lane. He can do all that. I'm not going to try and be smart or whatever when I've got someone that can even a pause. But when we did the game last week, Roma against Napoli, we heard the kind of loudspeaker, the Tannoy guy or whatever he was, saying something to the crowd. Now, it's difficult for us because you can hear certain things, but there was clearly a message. But then we were aware, we had an idea that was a warning, look, stop your chance. And then it became pretty clear when the play was stopped that's what's happened. But Mateo was able to, that's why it's great doing it with him. He's able to hear chants or to hear stuff from the sidelines. But as far as kind of, it's difficult for me to talk about as far as the bilingual is concerned, because these are people that may spend the majority of their week speaking English.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's hard. I'll use certain foreign phrases where it's applicable, but I have nothing kind of written down. I don't know about other commentators. I can tell you everything about all the co-commentators that I've worked with, but I've never worked with any other commentator. You don't have two commentators in the same booth. I don't know if they write stuff down. I don't know about the kind of stuff that they do. But I'm just speaking for me.
Well, it's interesting. Probably in the last 2 years, we've seen more notes written by lead commentators worldwide than probably ever before. Because I mean, a lot of them are actually now. I mean, Arlo White has been kind of taking pictures of his kind of setup before he goes into a match, and kind of the 11 players on each side and his notes. John Champion's been doing the same thing too, and a bunch of other commentators too. For you, Mark, what's your style? Do you have a laptop? Do you have notes scribbled down? Do you print them all out and put labels?
No laptop. What I'll do, Chris, I will send you, and you can put it out. I'll send you my sheet for this weekend's game. I've got two. I'm doing Juventus Milan as the second game, but I've already finished my prep for Parma against Roma, and I will send you it. And you can do whatever you want with it and showcase it. I put it out on social media a couple of times previously for other games, but I'm welcome to share it with you. I'll email it over to you,
yeah.
And you can send it out. I'm slightly different from everyone else. I have little pictures. I have pictures of every player. And I think for me, it's important because I'll know if I'm doing the game weekly and I've done the games before or teams before, I'll know 95% of them. But there might be one that is coming up from the youths or is called up for the first time due to injuries. So I've got pictures of them all. It might be the obvious ones like Buffon or Ronaldo, but it's the way I've always done it. It's the way I've always done it. And I'll give a little hat tip here. It's a nod. Jim Proudfoot, who's a very, very good commentator, and I worked with at Talk Sport before I came over here. Jim is your voice you'll probably hear most of the time on your early game on a Saturday morning. Jim sent me over a basic template for games he used to cover back in 2010, and I've just tweaked it. I've put little photos in and pictures and everything else. That's the way I do it.
Very good.
It might not be what everyone else does, but I don't want to be everyone else.
Yeah, and I'll definitely certainly share that on Twitter at Will Soccer Talk. So keep an eye out for that. By the time you listen to this podcast, it'll probably be up there and being circulated around. One more note, Mark, before we head on to the news, is that for the commentating this weekend, the Liverpool Man City game, I believe like the world feed is going to be Peter Drury, but the US feed is going to be Ola White and Graeme Lasseau.
Ah, okay. I knew about the world feed. I didn't know. I mean, that makes total sense.
Yeah.
That you put your A team for NBC on that one. But yeah, for everyone else outside of the US, I think you've got your, for me, the top pairing anywhere in Drury and Begland.
Absolutely. Now, moving on to TV streaming news, this past weekend I was a guest of the Bundesliga, so I had a chance to go to Frankfurt and to Dusseldorf to see a couple of matches and also to learn more about the Bundesliga, what they're up to in terms of promoting the league overseas, interviewing some of the players and the executives, and really get a better feel for the whole Bundesliga experience. Well, in one of these meetings that we had with the Bundesliga CEO, Christian Seifert, he mentioned something very interesting, and he said, this is the quote from him, he says, "I must admit, I was a little bit disappointed with Fox Sports as a partner. Because of Fox Sports, it's hard as a US Bundesliga fan to get used to the Bundesliga if you play one time on that channel, and then one time on another channel, and then again on that channel, so on and so forth." And these are fair comments. We've especially talked about this on the podcast quite a bit in terms of the consistency with Fox Sports. It's been very difficult. With NBC, it's just as one example, going into any Premier League weekend, you can almost regurgitate exactly which times and which channels the game's going to be on. With the Bundesliga, you really have to look. I mean, sometimes it could be Fox Soccer Plus. Sometimes it could be over-the-air Fox. But certainly some fair comments there from the CEO. What was surprising, though, is the timing of this, because Fox Sports still has the rights for the Bundesliga until May 2020, before ESPN picks up the rights in August 2020. So in some ways, you would think that he would have held back and just not said anything, but it is what it is. One thing that I discovered as a possibility, and that there's no certainty that this is going to happen, but there have been some kind of basically preliminary talks about the possibility of ESPN doing a 30 for 30 documentary about some aspect of the Bundesliga. Now, whether or not this will happen or not, we don't know yet, but it has been mentioned, so that's something to keep an eye out, and that gives you an idea too in terms of how ESPN is going into the coverage of the Bundesliga and looking for the story within the story, looking for ways to take advantage in a good way of ESPN FC, both the TV show and the website, and the storytelling abilities that the ESPN has, which is a huge advantage over Fox. FoxSports.com has, as far as I know, no written content. It's all video. So ESPN certainly comes at this from a completely different angle. And I think most of us, Mark, are looking forward to it. I'm sure you are too. But this is something that is a big step for the Bundesliga, going to a mostly streaming solution for the future. And in many ways, they could be ahead of their time. They could be going down a path that's going to give them some much rich rewards down the future. At the same time, there's always that transitional period too, where you have people that are, you mean, become accustomed to watching everything on television and will feel that they're going to miss out. With you working at ESPN, it's probably a little bit difficult for you to talk about it, but in terms of excitement or anticipation for ESPN Plus and the, you mean the ESPN games that will be on television, what's it like within ESPN HQ? Any kind of excitement building yet?
Yeah, because a couple of things. I love the product. I haven't done much of it this season, but I've done for the international audience and for the domestic audience with German Cups in the past. I've covered a lot of Bundesliga. Obviously, you've got a lot of Americans over there. And it's just a league that I enjoy watching. And give me the kind of Mönchengladbach on top right now, or Dortmund last season, and Bayern kind of playing catch-up. Give me all that. Give me Arsene Wenger there. I'd love to see that. Yeah. From an ESPN perspective, what we've started to do now, we've gone from famine to feast with the likes of ESPN Plus. It was a product that didn't exist. It now exists. It's got a lot of rights, and it's going to continue to grow. So what we started to do, actually, when I was at the World Series Baseball recently, Matteo and Dan and Craig were doing kind of wraparound shows or post-match shows for exclusive to ESPN Plus. Now, this is something I've heard you and Kartik talk about on the podcast and on a few occasions, and I totally agree with you. A lot of it's down to staffing, and hopefully we will see over the next 6 to 12 months additional members of staff. I'm not speaking from any knowledge. I'm just thinking there is a platform now and an opportunity to add to that, because I think it's important. And I'm speaking here not as an ESPN staff member. I'm speaking here as a fan. Mm-hmm. I think it's important when you have the rights to Serie A and to the Bundesliga that we have and that we're going to get, if you can package that up, I just think it makes it more grandiose. We did it for the FA Cup final last year. We had our own commentary, and I know it's an ESPN Plus exclusive product. But for Serie A recently, we had the kind of post-match show with the analysis and looking back at the goals. And slowly but surely, we're getting there. Again, staffing will hopefully not be an issue for much longer. And I don't think you sign a six-year deal and pay what we're paying for the Bundesliga without different plans. And the 30 for 30 is really interesting. I didn't know about that. And I wouldn't be surprised that, obviously, if it's a domestic game, which I think there's going to be potentially four a year on domestic, that there'll be a kind of, it won't just be hosted by the commentator. And then halftime will be a pre-recorded segment. I'd like to think going forward, we've already shown that we can do it. So hopefully that's the case. And the second thing, Chris, is right now, it's a case of who's got ESPN Plus. I think down the line, and we're talking the next 2, 3, 4 years, and who knows where the Champions League will end up. And if it does end up down the line at ESPN or ESPN Plus, then it might be a case of who's not got ESPN Plus, because it's going to be as required for a football fan in this country as NBC, as anything else, that's as Fox in the World Cup or whatever. It's going to be a vital part. So a lot of excitement, but also a lot of kind of, okay, cool, what we're going to do around this. And there's a lot of questions, and we'll get answers, but yep, we don't need them just yet.
Yeah, and the six-year deal certainly helps in terms of, just like with NBC Sports and the Premier League, in terms of having a longer deal where you can plan ahead more effectively, you can really launch a platform and a marketing campaign, advertising campaign, and build on it. And just a few other news items too. With the Champions League, we know that the bidding for the 2021 to 2024 rights ended this week. Now, the process that they're in, sometimes they'll go back for some additional bids, or sometimes they'll review that, or we'll talk to the lawyers. So it's still a ways away from actually us knowing who those rights will go to. But it's quite possible, too, that Turner Sports may lose out on the next rights to the UEFA Champions League and would have one more season next season, which may be their last before those are handed over to another organisation. And having a deal that's only on a three-year cycle doesn't give you much time, because you're halfway through and you might be finding out that you've lost the rights for the next rights cycle. So the six-year deal with the Bundesliga and ESPN Plus is huge for both partners, and really is a huge statement of intent from ESPN. A couple of other news items real fast too is that, speaking of Turner Sports, is that there was some revelations this week too that Turner Sports is planning on taking the BR Live streaming platform and integrating it into the Bleacher Report app. Now, this process is going to take about 2 years to complete. It's something that makes total sense on paper. It's, I mean, the Bleacher Report app is... has a lot more subscribers, is a very, very used and very, very reliable app. But the process is going to take 2 years. So by that point in time, once the BR Live app is integrated into Bleacher Report and BR Live becomes no more, it's quite possible that Turner may have lost the lion's share of the rights that they have for soccer. Of course, they have other sports too, but interesting things to watch there. And last but not least, the NWSL Championship on ESPN saw a 43% growth for the coverage there. So all in all, some great news. Now, moving on to TV ratings, we don't have all of the numbers yet. We will have them posted on worldsoccertalk.com on Thursday or Friday, so certainly come back and see the full list there. What we do have is some numbers. I'll point out Everton against Spurs on NBCSN on Sunday, which was the 11:30 kickoff to 1:30, the one that had 12 minutes of added time after that horrific injury. 466,000 there for that match. And then going down, Atlanta against Toronto on FS1 last Wednesday, and this was the MLS Cup playoffs. 359,000 viewers for that on FS1, so a great number there. For MLS and Fox. The LAFC Seattle game on ESPN, the MLS Cup playoff from last Tuesday, 389,000 viewers. And again, positive numbers all the way down the list. Now, moving on to listener mailbag, we've got JP says, with Kartik on the Bundesliga and streaming on that topic, Disney Plus / ESPN Plus may end up having a large number of subscribers, but doesn't necessarily mean a large portion of those subscribers will be viewing the Bundesliga. I've beaten this dead horse a billion times, but streaming for sports only pulls in the viewers that are already looking to watch that event. No new fans or casual fans. Big soccer fan, goes without saying, if I'm reading this site, he says, but only got ESPN Plus specifically for Serie A because I was already a fan. Will also watch a tiny bit of Eredivisie, but that was only after falling in love with Ajax during the Champions League on linear TV and deciding to take a look when there's no Serie A La Liga match at the same time of interest. Bundesliga is currently my third option for soccer, but like Kartik, I don't think I'll necessarily seek it out once the change to ESPN Plus outside of a few matches a year. And those are the matches that will likely be shown on linear TV anyway. So some interesting thoughts there from JP in terms of kind of his viewing habits. And that is the thing, too. I mean, it's a long-term bet that ESPN Plus has, and especially with Disney Plus launching next week, which is going to be... There's also a Disney Plus bundle, which will include ESPN Plus. And as we talked about, I think it was Moffat Nathanson last week talked about in a year from now, by the end of 2020... globally, the Disney Plus bundle may have as many as, I think, about 18 million subscribers. So massive numbers. So even if a small percentage of those people give the Bundesliga a try or find Serie A as they're going through their app and come across it, there's big opportunities there to get some viewership bump. We'll have to see on that, Mark.
The one thing I would say, Chris, is we've never had a choice like this. Ever. Mm-hmm. A football fan in this country or in any other country can pretty much watch what they want, when they want, if it's on. Now, you and I grew up in the UK, whereby we had three channels that became four channels that eventually became five channels. And then we, in 1989, had the the B Sky B, the satellite, and that opened our eyes. And then the Premier League started in 92. Quick story, I remember way back when I was a child, I stayed right on the kind of boundary line between Scottish television, this is ITV, and Border television. And it was back in the days of the late 80s and early 90s when they showed live games on ITV on a Sunday. We didn't get it on STV on Scottish television. So I'd say to my dad, "Dad, can we go to a restaurant or whatever?" Obviously, I couldn't drink, but he would then drive me half an hour down the road so we could watch the football. That's the kind of that's what we did back then. And I don't know if it was the same in Wales, or I would assume you would have got the coverage. But if Anglia or whoever had their own Welsh programming, then you would have had a kind of issue. You would have had to find somewhere that showed it. Now you switch your phone on, you put your iPad on, you put your laptop on, and you've got the choice. But with choice comes the slogan about satisfying some of the people some of the time, but not all the people all the time. You're diluting the options in that, A, there are so many, but B, you're going to have people saying, well, there might be all these subscribers to Disney Plus or ESPN Plus, but I'm not going to watch that. That's fine. No issue with that whatsoever. And that's for people who tally up the numbers. You can do anything you want with statistics. As a commentator, I know this. 45% of the time negative becomes 55% of the time positive. You can tweak them whatever way you want. But from a numbers perspective, they're going to have a lot of numbers. That's fine. And it's like saying with a free newspaper, the London Evening Standard or whatever, oh, we've got this number of readers. Well, that's how many have been distributed. A lot. I'm not saying they're falsities, but this is what can happen with numbers and statistics. But you have an unbelievable choice now. And to be fair, if you want to watch it, great. If you don't, well, you know it's there if you ever do. And I think it's great for the consumer.
And that's one thing that the Bundesliga has been missing, and they will get with ESPN Plus starting in August, is that consistency. So you know that every single weekend, like clockwork, you can tune in on a Friday for a 2:30 in the afternoon Eastern game, and go through right through the weekend. The only one match you'll have to kind of pay attention to is that the one that may be on television, which is right now probably about four times a year. And it's probably going to be, I mean, two of them are probably going to be De Clasica. One might be the opening match of the season, and one might be the title match of the season. But it's one of those things that consistency, knowing that the ease of access, if you have ESPN Plus, makes it more of a better experience for fans of German football, and who enjoy watching that match. And it might be one of those things, too, that you might have Serie A fans or viewers of fans of the clubs saying, okay, well, let me get into the Bundesliga and let me watch some of those matches, and vice versa. So there's a lot of cross-pollinationing happening there too.
I think the problem that we all have, and it's funny, you were talking earlier about going with Real Madrid Galatasaray over whatever. We've just put out our fixtures between now and the end of 2019. Of course you're going to get stick. Why have you chosen that over that one? It's not our decision. It wasn't their decision. As far as the commentators are concerned, to do Real Madrid Galatasaray, we just have to abide by it. And I'll find myself sometimes sending texts to Robbie Musto, who used to work at ESPN, saying, what are you doing this for? Why are you not doing that game? And he's like, we had a chat about it, and this is what we decided. I think with them at NBC, there's a lot of input invited by everyone across the board, and I think that's healthy. Mm-hmm. You're not always going to make the right decision. And going back to satisfying some of the people some of the time and not all the people all the time, there's 20 teams in the Premier League, and this is the way it works. And the same with Serie A and the Bundesliga. We can't show them all on linear, but what's the difference between finding something on ESPN Plus and finding a Premier League game that's on CNBC? And the Wolves-Arsenal game on Saturday was the secondary game, and that did 160K. Which is all right, but if you're a Wolves or an Arsenal fan, you find it. The one thing, speaking from someone in the business, that I would say we could maybe do better is cross promotion. Tell people, don't make them have to find it, don't make them have to guess. Make it easier to cross promote on other shows, on other platforms, that this is where you can find it. Because with the choice that people now have, which is incredible, as a football fan in this country or anywhere else, we'll do digging. We'll find it. But human beings are lazy. We want it on a plate. We want to know where it is, when it is, and how we get there. We should make it easier for people to do that. And if we do, then hopefully the numbers can increase.
Absolutely. And actually, that's partly World Soccer Talk in terms of kind of filling that void, in terms of just trying to make it as easy as possible to let people know about the different types of coverage out there, and all the TV schedules and which matches are on which channels. And also,
and it's a big help. It's a really big help.
Yeah, and even looking at this weekend's match too, the De Clasico between Bayern Munich and Dortmund, big match. It's on FS2, but the reality is that FS1 has college football. I think Big Fox has college football too. So it's oftentimes, whether it's Fox or ESPN or other broadcasters, there's other coverage that they have contractual rights to that they have to show those games. And unfortunately, soccer sometimes gets knocked down the pecking order slightly.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of the business.
And that's the problem, Chris, because coming over from the UK, like the pair of us have done, we're aware of college football. We had no idea the numbers that does. Mm-hmm. I mean, ESPN's deal on college football it's got about another 15 to 20 years to run. And the numbers, we're like, why aren't they showing this on ESPN or ESPN2? College football does scary numbers on Fox, on ESPN, on all the platforms that it's on. And it's kind of look outside your box a little bit, and that you have to understand that as much as we want the world to revolve around football, our teams, our leagues, our countries, business is business. And people who are making these decisions know what they're doing. And you're not going to get a Serie A game or a Bundesliga game on ESPN on a Saturday morning instead of college game day. It's not the way it works. It's like saying when we were back in the UK, you're not going to get Liverpool have drawn Arsenal in the League Cup. Right, we'll move EastEnders and we'll do that. It's only the top events that get done. It's exactly the same over here with college football. And that's the way it should be, because they've paid a lot of money for it. Yep. And the viewership is a lot more than we can get.
Absolutely. Next up is Monty Reed. Monty says, I have ESPN Plus, and like Kartik, I tend not to open the ESPN Plus app on my Roku. I go to Fubo first because I love how they list out every match that is going to be played. I have no clue why other streaming services don't copy this. During college football season, I'll open Sling TV next. Only after I determine that nothing else is on, I will open up ESPN Plus app. If ESPN Plus was integrated into a streaming service, like the way that ESPN 3 is with Sling TV or Tudo NA Extra on Fubo, I would watch it a lot more, since there's a lot of content that I do enjoy. Eredivisie, NCAA, men and women's soccer, etc. But should we not expect even more soccer leagues to go behind a paywall? How do ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox and others make money from televising a match? Unless I'm missing something, it's from the pre-game, post-game and halftime commercials. We bitch when we read that a match will start at 2 p.m. and tune in to see 20 minutes of commercials before that match really kicks off at 2:20 p.m. But isn't this how Fox is making money? I'm sure ESPN believes that one Serie A match per week on one of the ESPN channels will encourage more people to watch more Serie A behind the paywall of ESPN Plus. Turner's mistake with BR Live is that they did not count on so many people willing to watch those matches in Spanish instead of going to their paywall. ESPN was smart by getting Bundesliga in both English and Spanish. Good observations there by Monty, and actually it's just a coincidence that Mark, you're on this week, and Kartik will be back next week, but I agree, I think, with almost everything that Monty says there.
So, you've just arrived back. You were a big football fan, but you travelled to Planet Zog 10 years ago. And you've just arrived back from Planet Zog. And you've tuned in. Your first podcast you've listened to is this week's World Soccer Talk podcast. And you've listened to the first four or five sentences from Monty Reed. And you're like, what? Fubo. ESPN Plus. Streaming. Sling. Other things, Tudo NN or whatever it is, and you now have that. For me, what I'm trying to say is it complicates things. There's a lot going on, and as I say, we find things, but I think if we can simplify everything, And I'm led to believe, and I don't know if this is the case, I have TVs in my house, which when we moved probably 3 years ago, we bought. Those TVs are smart TVs, but they don't have the ESPN Plus app on them. I'm led to believe that if you buy a TV, smart TV now, a new one, that it has, as one of its apps, ESPN Plus. So it's simple. It's as easy as going to an HDMI to change between Amazon Prime or however you do it. It's going to be simple. Now, if you've been on Planet Zog and you didn't understand what Fubo is or what Sling is or what ESPN Plus is, that I can understand why other people, maybe a generational thing, are slightly complicated and confused by that. And I think as time goes on with the rights that ESPN Plus is getting and that everyone else is getting and their second screen content, second screen's been around for over a decade. I did golf and tennis second screen in 2010. So it's not new, but we have to make it easier for people to find things. And Monty's clearly clued up about what he likes, where he goes, but we have to make it simpler for people in the future so that they don't have to have USBs plugged in or HDMI 4, 5, 6 or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think they'll get to that, but it's a good point that Monty makes.
Next up is Mark Doherty, and he says, I was watching Union Berlin against Hertha Berlin. Love the atmosphere, mostly, of this historic occasion. Great game for the underdogs. During the incidents that occurred in the stands, FS1 broadcasted a message scroll that notified the fan watching on TV the match had been interrupted due to safety concerns. Is this purely a Fox or Bundesliga thing? Are other leagues and broadcasters going to start doing this if similar horrible incidents occur with safety, racism, etc.? Mark, do you know about this in terms of like Serie A, if a match is delayed, or you mean basically abandoned or postponed, is that usually, is it broadcaster by broadcaster, or would the rights holder do something there?
No, the World Feed had nothing last week when we did Roma-Napoli and the game was stopped and halted for a period until things calmed down. As a commentator and an analyst, it's kind of up to us and our producer to find out what's going on. And we have our methods that we look at during the game. I think there's a live blog on Football Italia, which is a wonderful, wonderful website, which is very helpful. But as far as something that's on the screen is concerned, no. And it can be difficult. When you're calling games like we do with a lot of games off tube, off monitors, we can only see and hear what everyone else can see and hear. And it can be difficult. So that's interesting that the FS1 did that. But the other thing is, when we say something, we've got to be careful that it's the right thing that we're saying. We're not going to take a risk. Well, that's what we think is happening. If it's something like that, if it's a game being suspended or stopped for a safety or a security or a chant, we have to know what's going on. And maybe that's something that can be done by more world feeds because they're on site. It's a lot easier for them to get info than for us. So interesting FS1 did that. I think that's smart.
Yeah, I think there was a match last season too, which was the Monday match. I can't remember if it was Mönchengladbach. It actually might have been somebody else, but it was a match where the tennis balls were thrown on the pitch. And yep. It was like thousands of tennis balls thrown on the pitch. And it was something, I think Fox had the scroll across the bottom that said the match had been abandoned. And you mean they had to go in and clear up all the balls and come back and fix things. But a lot of that in terms of, for me personally, I think I was able to just hop on Twitter and look in terms of the live updates and reports coming from the match itself, from the broadcasters, well, actually from the journalists there. And I was able to get more kind of intel on what was happening than what Fox had said, which is basically, I mean, this is kind of what happened and that's it. But I think you're always going to get that too with a second screen, whether it's, you mean, access, you know, on your phone or your computer to a whole host of more resources and feedback instantly, faster than the broadcaster is sometimes, where it is one of those crazy things that happens. It's rare, But yeah, it is an interesting development, especially in the past, even the past couple of years, in terms of this seems to be happening more and more in terms of whether there's, unfortunately, whether it's racism or whether it's chanting or whether it's just protests from supporters.
The one message I would give to maybe younger listeners to this podcast and voracious users of social media is quite simply, it's more important to be right than to be quick.
Yeah.
And I think the same applies for commentating with regards to having to talk about why a game has been stopped. I want to be right. I don't want to jump to a conclusion, an assumption that this happened. It might seem obvious, but this is a gray area because unless there's conversations between TV rights holders globally and the World Feed about what we could both do better, but what we need when something like this happens, then it's up to us. But we have to be careful. Mm-hmm. We have to be careful. I'd rather be right than be first with something. Yeah. Ideally, you want to be first and be right. But if you can only have one, just make sure you're right. It's not always about being first.
Good point. And last but not least, For the Culture has a tweet here that came in. Has there been any talk by ESPN of possibly creating a 24/7 soccer channel, considering all the properties they've been collecting in the past year, even in a streaming-only capacity within ESPN Plus instead of cable? It's something that is badly needed. What's your take on this, Mark?
When do I sleep?
Right.
I've got a 20-month-old daughter. I'd love that, but I'll take you back to something I said earlier. I'd like to think that if the more rights are being added and more is being asked of those of us that work for ESPN, bring it on. I'm happy to do as much work in football because it's not really work. It's a hobby. But I think you would need to extend the staff of that. And we're not just talking about on-air staff because just as important are the others, the producers, the directors, the stats, the people that put all together, mm-hmm. Something like that. 24/7 channel. I mean, I had friends at ESPN yesterday. I gave a little tour to, and it was enlightening for me about all the way it started, and ESPN didn't go 24/7 until nearly a year after it was first launched on the 7th of September 1979. It was the 1st of September 1980 that it became 24/7. There's a lot, and I know a lot has changed since then, but the idea is good. The application would be tougher, but I think if I said earlier about us just starting to do wraparound shows or full-time shows with highlights on ESPN Plus only, then that's certainly a start. What will it lead to or where will it lead to? I don't know, but I think for me, working at ESPN, the future is certainly exciting.
My take on this is that we already have it in a roundabout way, because if you look at, say, ESPN Plus and you look at ESPN FC, the nightly show, you look at all the coverage that ESPN Plus offers, from Serie A to Major League Soccer to the Championship. You mean the idea of kind of a 24/7 soccer channel, which the best example of this would be Fox Soccer Channel from back in, you mean, the 1990s, 2000s, yeah. Is that Fox Sports or Fox Soccer Channel effectively was one match after another being played, and then you'd have a couple of shows here and there. That's what you have with ESPN Plus today, with the Bundesliga starting next season on there. You're going to have even more coverage. Not only that, but you're going to have you have access to a whole bunch of other sports and documentaries and you name it. And the way that the viewer or the soccer fan, his or her habits have changed is because of podcasts and other things. We're much mm-hmm. more in a self-selective mode where we're going to go and choose the things that we want to watch and we want to learn from or even that we enjoy. So that becomes really kind of a modern day 24/7 soccer channel, is that we have it. It's just a different, it's framed differently than what we kind of think of as a 24/7 soccer channel, which is, say, from a decade ago, which is completely different than what we have today.
Take it back further than a decade ago. You and I grew up. The European Cup was played over two legs. It was a Wednesday night. It was 7:45. Mm-hmm. That became a Tuesday then and a Wednesday. That then became a group stage. Then it became a Champions League for teams that weren't even champions. Then recently it became staggered kickoff times. Then it became, prior to that, the Europa League on a Thursday. So you've got Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I mean, football, you're right. Football is pretty much a 24/7 business to the extent you can get highlights or whatever. But that's a quick point I wanted to make about news gathering and rights. You may have noticed on ESPN FC this year, if you watch it on ESPN Plus, there are no Premier League highlights. We don't show the goal. We did that last season. There was an agreement that was reached last season that wasn't reached this season. Now, it's different from a sports, or what's perceived as a sports show, to show rights from other companies. It's fine showing it from your own one, but if it was a news gathering show, and this is the argument you have, it's like in the UK, Sky News can show up to, I think it's a minute and a half of footage, but Sky Sports can't unless they have an agreement. And as part of a news gathering agreement, a news channel can show footage if they give the kind of the due deference and the credit to which company it's been broadcast on. This year, we haven't got that agreement for highlights and for footage on FC. So when you're looking at a 24/7 station, if you've got so-called news shows like ESPN FC, it's still classed as a sports show, so you are to an extent limited on what other footage you can show that's not broadcast on your own network.
Mm-hmm. And it's a shame that NBC Sports and ESPN weren't able to agree to this, because to me, ESPN FC is more accessible. That's the place I would go to. I do go to for news analysis and clips of highlights. And I don't necessarily go to NBC Sports for that. I mean, obviously, when the Premier League is on, I'll watch those matches there. But that's not a place I keep on going back to. So when the Premier League's over, in terms of the regular matches and the post-match discussion, I usually don't go back to that, and I usually don't go back to the website. So what I do catch it on is usually social media, if it's not on ESPN FC. So it's, and again, that's just me. To me, it actually would help the Premier League, and it would help NBC Sports if they were able to do a deal with ESPN FC, especially now with becoming more and more the destination for soccer fans in the United States.
Well, one thing I would say just finally, Chris, is I think Major League Soccer's got it right in that within minutes of something big happening, whether it's a golazo from Zlatan or whatever it is, mm-hmm. they make it available on their Twitter account, and it's not geo-blocked. It's available to all.
Yeah.
And I think that really helps the brand, in that you'll have ESPN or you'll have BBC or you'll have Fox or whatever, and their Twitter accounts will either retweet it or embed it and put their own comment on with the goal. And it's not blocked. I think the Premier League, and I know it's a kind of behemoth, and it doesn't even need a sponsor. They turn down a sponsor because they don't need the money. I think even little things like that. I mean, I follow BT Sport and Sky Sports in the UK, and I can't watch a lot of the goals content because it's geo-blocked. Having just come back from the World Series, any wonderful plays, home runs, grand slams, the Bregman hit or whatever, within seconds, their social media are on it. And you can witness it, you can watch it, and ESPN and Fox and BBC can embed it in a tweet, and it can go global, and it can be seen by everybody instantaneously. Mm-hmm. Major League Soccer is very good at that. There's a lot of other leagues that have still got a fair bit of catching up to do, as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely. Now, we want you to have your say, so you can always reach us via email through web at worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter at worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can always post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com. If you have any questions, any analysis, and any reaction to some of the things we've said, just let us know. We'd love to read those out on air. So thank you for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, Spotify, Pandora, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audio Boom, Overcast, and worldsoccertalk.com. And if you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review on iTunes. And Mark, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. I really appreciate the time you've given us, and also a lot of insight into not only the role of a commentator, but also some insight into the business. It's been a joy having you on.
thank you. And if Kartik goes away again, just if you want to get me back on, I'd be more than happy to do so. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Enjoy your football.
Choosing where to go to university is a big commitment.
By choosing to study at the University of Central Lancashire, you'll be choosing a place that will support you as you step into your future.
You'll be choosing a new place to call home.
We see our students for who they are and who they can be.
We see opportunity.
We see potential.
We see you.
There's still time to apply for a degree through clearing.
Visit uclan.ac.uk/clearing to find out more.